Welcome to the Arguing Agile podcast, where enterprise business agility coach Om Patel and me, product manager Brian Orlando, debate the real-world challenges agile professionals will face. We are not here to sell you anything. We are here to argue about agile so that you don't have to. So you're a product leader. That's what we call people who hire people in product management now. We call them product leaders, Om. Didn't know if you knew that.
I did not, but that's enlightening.
We're starting the podcast by turning off product leaders. So if you're a product leader and you're hiring a product manager, what are some steps to get them set up and started in the right way?
That's a great question, because I don't know if there's a whole lot of artifacts out there that help product leaders. I think people struggle with this generally in the field. That's my sense of it. So in this podcast, we're going to unpack that and figure out like what are some good things that they can do. I mean, right off the bat, I can think of applying the same principles you would apply onboarding anybody new, right? They're coming into your company or your organization as a new person. So it stands to reason that you would, you would explain to them what the organization is all about. What is your org vision, mission, etc.? And what are you in business to do? And explain to them, this is how the company is right now, and that's right. What you're walking into.
Yeah, a book I keep going to many, many times on the podcast is Gino Wickman's Traction, because in the book Traction, he delineates working in the business, meaning, your day-to-day work versus working on the business. Right. And not a lot of businesses take the time to say, hey, are we stopping to think about how we can do these work processes better? Not a lot of people are even stopping to think about that. And an overview of how our intra-team practices work, an overview of your mission and vision of the organization. Again, assuming that exists.
Well, that's a big assumption too. I agree. Yeah. I think a lot of times this falls on HR packaging it. This is your onboarding package.
Oh, no.
That's what I found. I mean, go visit these websites or go listen to these or watch these videos and you'll become indoctrinated, aware of what we're all about. You can't ask any questions, of course, when you're doing that, because you're just consuming that, right?
I was going to say, you had me at HR. Like, you're not allowed to ask questions. You're not allowed to think on your own. You're not allowed to stray from procedure. Welcome to dealing with HR.
Like, right, right.
I'm already out as soon as you mention HR. We've hit on problem number one in the podcast. We're going to assume that you have a mission for the organization and a vision for the organization written down somewhere, right? The same thing when we go into the next thing we're going to say is, okay, as soon as you understand the vision for the organization, we're going to assume that your product has values and has a vision, that you have a product vision. I guess if you're on the onboarding, the being onboarded side.
The onboardee. Yeah.
Like, you find out you don't have those things.
You still have a resume that's fairly updated. Yeah. So move on from there.
That's right. Hopefully you still have other people offering you jobs. That's,
right.
Yeah.
Right. I think a lot of organizations, though, tend to have something when it comes to, vision and mission. Even if it's on a plaque in reception, they pay lip service for the most part.
Sure.
Right. When a new person joins, they're doing that when they point at something static, right? Whether it's a video or a website, something that they just expect you to read and agree with, because there's no opportunity to ask questions. That's red flag number one. And we do in this podcast have a collection of red flags. So this is number one, right? When that's happening, you have no idea who to ask questions to. You've just been given a link or a bunch of documents by HR under the guise of onboarding. That's not onboarding for me.
Yikes.
Covered a lot there.
I mean, onboarding, that, not good enough. I think about your day-to-day in product management. Your team, the other teams you interface with, that you interact with, they're super important to you. That makes or breaks you in product management. And your cross-functional team, whether they are cross-functional, I guess we're assuming at this point in the podcast, because I have a development team and I have a QA team and I have whatever, that just makes it 10 times worse than what it is now. But assuming that you have a cross-functional team, assuming you have a designer, assuming you have a tech lead, assuming you have everything, all the illities in the Marty Kagan book, right? Assuming you can actually tick all those boxes. Right. Hopefully you have people that can clearly delineate that for you, clearly detail it for you. And it's not sometimes, I don't know, sort of. I think of, we're on a shared services model. You have to kind of just beg for these people's time.
Learn to speak loud, because the loudest voice wins, right? So yeah, definitely look, org design has a lot to do with it. I know we're going to have a podcast on that at some point, but definitely so. You're coming in, you have no idea. You don't know left from right, and you need help. You need help to succeed, even to be placed in a position where you can run from there on and be successful. But typical onboarding initiatives at most organizations leave a lot to be desired, I feel. In this arena, you know, they drop you in it and you either sink or swim. Mm-hmm. That's typically what happens in practice, and it's just not good enough, like you said.
Well, another part of this that's super important is stakeholder management, because again, if you're talking about cross-functional teams, most likely it'll, like, you may talk about like development teams or you know what, another, like, we talked about QA as a separate team, like, well, you gotta have QA, but you know, the other teams that I've gone through that the organization basically had very little power to say, oh, we're going to do this or we're not going to do this, is we had a team. I was on a contract one time where we had a penetration testing team, and your work, anything you wanted to put out through to production before it would be deployed, you had to get the sign off of the pen testing team to say, I don't remember what they're called, security team or something. I don't remember what they called. Basically, they were a penetration testing team. You had to get there okay. The point of this category is, in product management, regardless of how many teams you have to go through, it's all just stakeholder management. You know, and it's up to you to build relationships with people on those teams and to understand their work processes and stuff like that. And a lot of this is heaped on the product manager, you know. And yeah, it is stuff that your product manager should do. But as a product manager here, I'm kind of thinking about this category and saying, I don't know, it's not really product management. I mean, can your developers help with this? If you have a Scrum Master, can they help with this? Is there ways that you can delegate this where you don't have to deal with so much?
Definitely that is the case, that people can help with this. Developers, yes. Anybody, really. Look, BAs. But these people don't have the influence they need with people like AppSec you were mentioning, right? Mm-hmm. Whoever it is, compliance, or regulatory, whatever it is. So as an incoming product manager, if you could understand the lay of the land and get to know the players, that's only going to be helpful. Because at worst, what will happen is you can empower your team and say, go reach out to, you know, Fred over there or Mary over there. But if they get inaction, if they get nothing, right? Yeah. Then you can do something. You can talk to Fred, or you can talk to Fred's boss, or whatever it is. So yeah. I think it behooves you to understand who the players are. And that's part and parcel of the bigger, the stakeholder management piece, right? I feel it is, at least. Why wouldn't you want to know that, right? As a product manager, you have a wide berth. You have a lot of things to cover. And it's people that will help you or people that will hinder you. In either case, you need to know who they are, right? But who's going to help you who's going to help introduce you to these people when all you've got is a document with a few hyperlinks in it?
Well, also, stakeholder management, to me, it's the Roman Pickler 2x2 that maybe in the editing and throw up on the screen right now, because I'm far too lazy to do it right now.
Like that's easily far better than, you know, either being handed or being told to develop an elaborate RACI. Right. Can't think of more things that are kind of contributing to more business rigidity, quite the opposite of agility, than an elaborate RACI.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I can't think of a more useless artifact than a RACI chart. Like, basically, all this is going to how decisions get made. It's going towards that question. How do the decisions at this workplace get made? I mean, if the product manager just makes a decision based off of what they're hearing, okay, that's fine. But also, like, is there a building frustration off of you know, every decision that the product manager makes? Is it just building more and more and more frustration? Like, how are you keeping track of that? Somebody is.
For sure. As an incoming product manager, you're probably not, you know, given a whole lot of latitude to make those decisions, because people don't know you. They don't know you. They don't trust you. You're new. And it's probably mutual, to be fair. But you're new. They hired you for a purpose, right? So I think the onus is on the organization to make sure that your onboarding is as effective as possible, even if it is inch deep and mile wide. Sure. That's okay, because you can always deepen later. But often it is inch deep and inch wide, if that. And that's the problem, right?
The problem I find in product management is that you when they finally bring in a professional product manager, they start to learn that their knowledge of the customers, was limited in the first place. And you bring in this person that's starting to kind of, they're starting to take a peek behind the curtain and like, what does the wizard actually look like behind that curtain? In reality, what you're doing is you're putting evidence to some of the assumptions, and the sticky part of this is that may not be appreciated in some circles.
For sure. I mean, in some circles, in those same circles, this product manager would be labeled as a troublemaker because they're asking questions now. You know, how dare you? We've always worked this way, right? Customers can like it or lump it, right? It's like you hired a professional product manager to come and take you to a different level.
Yeah.
You've already been suffering, but you just don't know you've been suffering. So yeah, absolutely, you're right. It's an uphill battle from the onboarding step onwards. So what is a newly enlisted product manager to do in this scenario? If you're flipping to the side of the person who is just coming in, what do you do when you're not getting what you need, right? What you are getting is the quote-unquote official onboarding. Right. This is the formal piece.
Right.
If you go through all of these in the next day or so, now we deem you as onboarded. As opposed to there's a parallel track, I feel, whether it's recognized or not, I've always seen it. And that is the unofficial onboarding, which is you align with certain individuals, you talk to them, hopefully they'll open up and tell you how things really work that aren't written down. And it doesn't happen at work necessarily. Mm. You know, it happens at lunch or, you know, at the cocktails, you know, after work. But that is important. So if you're an incoming product manager, use any avenue you need to in order to unearth these things. Mm-hmm. And not all of them will be official.
I would think that, I would suppose that this is an area that a lot of people have difficulty with. Because now you're talking about, like, you're not talking about product management from the perspective of software development or, you know, putting out a certain feature and measuring its impact or whatever.
Right.
Now you're talking about running a business. You're talking about being a GM at this point when you're saying, well, just do whatever you need to do to make your business successful. You know, go to whatever meetings, like if the real meetings happen over golf, like now you got to learn how to play golf. Like, I mean, this is like real nitty gritty. I mean, some of it could potentially sound like, I don't know what, let me think about how I want to say what I want to say. What I want to say is the more unrefined the form is where the real decisions get made, the more you have to try to crowbar yourself into that form, whatever it is. If it's golf games, okay, well, I guess you're going to learn to play golf. If it's, you know, after happy hour afterwards, like, I guess you're going to, you know, like to go to happy hour or whatever and get one drink. And then just ask for extra ice and have it watered down or whatever. Like, I mean, there's like, this is not like, people might listen to this and be like, well, this is not advice that I want to take hold of and deal with. But
you may need it.
Do you want to be successful? We can't put this in a bottle and sell it for $1,000 for a 2-day training. What we're about to say here,
right?
You know, that's about this. Like, you want to be a true general manager. Like, the business owner is only going to look to hand this segment of the business over to you when they believe that you're the person that can do it. And if handing off the decision making in the form that decisions actually get made, whatever that might be, however distasteful you might see it, like, I don't know, man, there's a lot of come to Jesus in what we're saying right now. You know what I dislike about what we're talking about now is this is meet them where they are. That's what we're describing.
We are.
Business decision making, meet them where they are. If the place that they are is dirty and dingy, you still got to go there until you can take control of the decision-making process for that product and then pull it out and put it into a better place, basically.
Yeah, and look, we're talking about this from the perspective of a new person joining, right?
Right.
So definitely, like, pull on your galoshes, put on your long gloves. Coming in and you're not even swimming, right? The tide is going, you know, against you. You have to do all of these things and any of these things.
Too much mud to be swimming.
There is.
Your wing.
There's a lot of mud. Keep that snorkel handy too, then,
right.
I guess.
And the resume updated.
But look, you have to do this because if you don't do this and you're just simply tagging along or moseying along, don't forget, you're a new person. You only get a finite amount of time that's granted to you to make a difference. It's not the difference you make, it's the perception of the difference you're seen as making. That I believe in that, right? So if you're not seen to be or perceived to be making a difference in a short period of time, you're basically not effective. And will get questioned and will appear in someone's crosshairs. So yeah, do all of the things that you need to do in order to get beyond the official onboarding protocols or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And if it means, yeah, you're right. If it means going to, you know, weekend golf games, whatever it is, do it. You don't have to necessarily play golf. Just go do it. Mm. Be vulnerable. I don't know how to play, but, you know, I'll go.
Yeah, you're talking product management now. So again, yeah. It's like, what type of product manager are you in this instance? Like, again, if you're in a giant company, maybe the decisions get handed down to you and you're just kind of playing the role. Like, oh, we haven't done that in product management.
Play the role.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, effectively, you're a glorified order taker at that point.
Yeah, backlog.
A backlog manager.
Yeah.
Backlog massager. Right.
But I mean, like, in that case, you still have responsibility to track where the real decisions are getting made. And if you don't have visibility to that forum, like, well, welcome to your new job. Finding visibility, finding where it is, and figuring out that forum. Part of what we're talking about is figuring out how the org sets goals and how you can align to those goals. Like that's this category. So the product leader would want to set goals, product goals, and to make sure that what you're doing is in alignment. So if you're the employee, you want to make sure that what you're doing is in alignment with the product goals, is in alignment with what the product leader thinks you should be doing. That's goal setting and alignment. And also, like, alignment is like one of those four letter words that really, like, I mean, it can be used and abused. I don't really know, you know, what it means, but it's up to you to figure out how to craft alignment.
Go create that with them, because they may just simply be from a school of thought where they say, here's somebody new. I'm going to set out arbitrary goals for this person, 30, 60, 90 days.
Right.
And what they prescribe within those categories might align better to just practices, as opposed to does the person really understand our customers? You know, how often do they talk to them? Things like that. You may not find them there. You may find things like, you know, does this person work well with their teams? Are they attending the team meetings? I mean, all the practices. If you're seeing that, then be vocal. Go create your own agenda with the product leader.
Right.
I've seen some pretty weak product leaders, unfortunately, in my time, where they just don't think beyond practices.
Well, I mean, the product leader role, first of all, is generally speaking, it's not really new, like new meaning like a new position, because management in and of itself has always been, you know, has been around for 100+ years, the idea of management. Right. But the idea of a product leader in like the Marty Kagan term of product leader, that is pretty new, because it what it's basically saying is you have somebody who knows what a product manager should be doing and is coaching them in terms of how they can improve their craft of product management. And the problem with that is it assumes that the person doing the coaching actually understands product management. And the problem with that is my experience has been the higher up in the organization you get, the less that person actually understands the role of product management. Usually when you get to the chief product officer level, those people have never worked as a product manager.
That is gold right there. Absolutely, I agree. That's the prevailing majority of product leaders that have never actually worked as that. Not necessarily everybody, but a lot of product owners, CPOs, they got ordained that title. They got into that job without having to actually perform the roles as product managers.
Right. Well, I mean, like, now we're at a point of the podcast where I don't even know where we're gonna go from now, because like now we're talking about people get hired in at the top of the organization. They get hired in because they look like / sound like / think like the C-level executives.
Or the C-level executive just came into the organization and brought along with them
a
bunch of people that, you know, were his inner circle, and you were one of them.
Yeah. You're my buddy, and you know, you've read a product blog.
And we play golf on the weekends.
You've read Inspired, and like now you're the product person, even though your background has nothing to do with product. Yeah. But I mean, like, but sadly, like, I easily 80% of the chief product officers I've seen in my career have been like that.
That's a big number.
They have no experience.
It's disappointing to say that. It's a big number, 80%. You're probably right. Yeah. I'd say.
I mean, maybe people, like, if your experience tells you otherwise, like, please comment on this podcast.
Sure.
Like, I would like to hear from you about this category. But again, I would easily put money on a solid 75% you know, whatever, 80%, same, very yeah. close. But it's been way more than 50-50. Way more than 50-50. It's just the people that I've seen in that role, they would, because they have no product management experience, they would never know what a good product manager looks like. Now, maybe they know what a good product leader looks like. So I guess you could say, well, maybe if they're they've been a really good salesperson or a really good chief of operations in the past or something like that, yep. they can hire good product people, and it doesn't exactly translate because they don't really need to know what it takes to build a good product to hire good product people.
It's going
to
be a bit hard if they're not directly involved in the hiring process, right?
You could say that for CEOs as well. Well, how are you going to be a CEO and hire a good chief revenue officer or chief operations officer as a CEO? Because you've never been a chief operations, a chief whatever. I mean, you, like, I could come along with that type of, you know, pushback, but only so far.
I mean, even if you've not been a CFO and you're a CEO, you've worked with, you know, a variety of CFOs, hopefully over time. You should be able to tell apart a CFO that just speaks the talk and, you know, versus somebody who's done the work. So, yeah, so coming back to the
category was organizational goal setting and right. alignment. So how do you know if you're, again, if you're a product leader and you're hiring in a product manager for the first time, how do you know that they're doing a good job coming online with organizational goal setting and alignment with your organizational goal setting?
Do they even understand your organizational goals, right? For this is, again, thinking from the product leader's perspective. Thinking from the newly ordained PM's perspective, it's how effective have the goals been communicated to me, right? Do I see that? Do I buy into it? And there's something going on here which I think applies generally, not just for product managers. The product leader is here the leader who is actually, you know, explaining the purpose, etc. People buy into the person first before they buy into their vision. So if the product leader is of the, you know, the characteristics that they portray are more like, you will do this, you will do this, they're kind of like setting out, let's say, in our example, they'll be setting out goals in terms of percentages, et cetera, revenue, numbers, whatever it is, and not really talking about the other things, right? Which is, you know, here's our purpose for being, here's our customer base, here's who we serve, here's why we do what we do. If they're not doing that, people buy into the person first and then their vision next. And in this case, it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, while you were explaining that, I was kind of thinking in my head, if the organizational goals are not written down somewhere, it's going to be super difficult for an onboarding employee to, you know, figure out what they are, you know, to vet out what they are, and then to make their goals and their product goals and their, you know, product vision and all that kind of follow it. Like, it's a lot easier if you're the product leader in this case, it's a lot easier to follow your product leader's lead than to kind of assume you're following their lead, but really be kind of making it up on your own and then kind of adjusting because you have a bunch of stakeholders that are beating you up. Like, that's just not a good situation at that point. I feel like we started with this category talking about, like, oh, how do I know that my people are following my lead? Well, I don't know. Are you laying out a good story for them to follow? As a leader, are you being easy to follow or are you being very hard to follow?
Yeah, are you being obtuse, right? Whether it's on purpose or not, I'm not going there, right? But if you're being obtuse or difficult to follow,
not on purpose.
You don't even. This is the danger, right? You don't even know that you're coming across as, I'm going to try this, obfuscatory. You're not being clear. Your purpose isn't clear, and chances are, if that is happening, it's because it's not clear to you yourself as a product leader. You yourself don't have that clarity. And then how can you expect to have someone else understand it? Because you don't really have it up here. Like, so it goes up another level.
You just outlined like 3/4 of product management challenges right there. And that statement is like, oh, please tell me what business goals or organizational strategy we're supposed to follow. And then business leaders throw their hands up and say,
Or they point at targets, right? This is what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Year on year, well, you know, year on, blah, 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 blah.
25% more revenue than last year. Useless.
Totally.
Useless. I want to move on quickly because I'm only going to get frustrated by this category. A lot of this will be expressed when you can't build a roadmap. Like, if you don't have strategy, you don't have goals, your business doesn't have a strategy, your business doesn't have a goal, it's going to be very difficult to build a roadmap. Now, I'm going to pivot to try to stay away from the like the bottom of the barrel scenario, the sure. worst 25, you know, the worst 20% of cases that will take 80% of our conversation and effort. I want to stay away from that for a second, and I want to pivot to the best 80% case, which says that you do have goals, and I can build a roadmap and a product portfolio off of that, off of those goals. So the first thing, if I'm a product leader and I'm hiring you, welcome to Brian Ohm Software Development Company. It's real weird that your name is Ohm and that you're joining us. I'm going to ask you, like, the first thing I'm going to say is, hey, in your first, you know, maybe not your first 30 days, but your definitely your first 90 inside that window, you're going to own the roadmap. At some point, you're going to take over the roadmap. It's not going to be my roadmap. I hand it to you and you have to figure out what's on the roadmap and kind of vet it and, you know, whatever along the way. After 90 days, I'm going to look to say, well, it's your roadmap now. You need to lobby why everything is in the position it's in and why it's there and the actual writing the things that are there and then telling me why they're there. You know what I mean? Why they're there? They're there? What a terrible way of explaining that. Anyway, you get my point. The current product offering, the potential new product offering, the potential new markets we can move into, how we're going to deal with competition, like all this expressed via the roadmap. Like, it's now over to you. So what is, like, as a new employee, you don't know anything about our roadmap, out to 90 days, 180 days, where you've now taken complete ownership of the roadmap, walk me through that process. How would you come on board as an employee? Again, assuming we have good practices, we have a strategy, right. We have a product vision.
Yeah, I think it all starts with that vision, right? You have a product vision and it's clear. So as an incoming product manager, I would want to really understand that product vision. I would want to understand why does it exist? Not just what the offerings are and who our customers are, but why does it exist? What difference does that make, right, to the industry, to our customers? If you understand that, then the next level down is going to be, okay, in my little microcosm, I'm a product manager for a product, series of product, whatever it is, product line. I need to understand how that contributes to the overall organizational strategy of what we're trying to do in this particular period. It could be a quarter, it could be a year. If you understand that, you're well on your way to now, not only, you know, understanding, but also crafting your own roadmap, right? How things fit into it. So then you'd be able to confidently stand up and say, here's the roadmap, here's how it contributes to our strategy for our current time frame, and here's why the items are where they are on the roadmap. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot there, right? There's a lot there. I've covered a lot of ground in that statement there.
Yeah, there is a lot. I'm thinking of,
there's assumptions built in as well. Like, you really take the time to understand your customers, you understand your market, you understand your competition, right? The whole landscape, and figure out where you're positioned in that. Are you a market leader? Are you a laggard? You know, what are you leading on? What are you lagging on? All of those things.
I'm also thinking about product managers coming into the foray. Like, there may be historical trends that you may not be aware of. Basically, you may need to dive deep into the data, assuming that your product has that, right, to figure out what's going on with the market, right, with the market. You may be taking over specific initiatives that your product or your business or whatever has kind of kicked off that you're in the middle of. Things that, you know, they weren't your decision, but they're in mid-flight, so, like, what are you going to do, fight against them? I mean, probably not, right? And then any upcoming milestones that have been kind of promised, you know, because you might be in that. Like, we did a whole podcast on, like, oh, deadlines in Agile, and like, people fight about them or whatever. But I'm like, yeah, you can totally do deadlines. It's super easy.
Yeah.
You know, let's just talk about, you know.
Yeah, you're right. You could have inherited somebody else's product.
You really could have, yeah.
Right? Somebody moved on or whatever happened.
And that assumes that also, again, if you listen to this podcast, you probably have some level of expertise in business agility. Again, like, this assumes a level of business agility with your organization, but you might be stepping in talking about your product portfolio or your roadmap or whatever with the assumption that, like, maybe your roadmap is drawn up in a way where it is taking account for non-cross-functional teams. You know, oh, QA on this date and this on this date and whatever. And, like, there's a whole process thing here that needs to be figured out to say, hey, we really shouldn't be working like this. This is not the way the roadmap should be created. Or you know what? Even like, I know we said we were going to stay away from this in this podcast just because we didn't get bogged down, but it's too juicy not to get into. Your roadmap is feature delivery with milestones and deadlines, not business outcomes.
Yeah, how many roadmaps are like that out there, I wonder, right?
90%.
I was going to say, it's not a trivial amount, for sure. Yeah. We talked about understanding the product, the vision, the market, the competitors. It also works the other way, to your point. Understand how your teams are structured today. Whether it's the way you like it or not, doesn't matter. Understand where they're coming from. Where are you today?
Right.
I guess I'm going back to meet them where they're at.
That's part of the process that we just called out is you need to understand. We know that we all read the 3 Marty Kagan books. We know that we should be doing business outcomes in our roadmap. How come all of my, like at the roadmap I look at and I grab, all says deliver X feature by Y date to Z customer. That's right.
Z.
I've learned all the podcasts. That's right. The Z customer.
Yeah.
Well, why is my roadmap like that? That's your first red flag to let you know, like, oh, well, because you're product leaders now, like that they either don't want to fight about this or they really don't understand about what a business outcome facing, you know, now, next, later, modern style roadmap is. Maybe you found yourself with it didn't come out in the interview process, and now your first, you know, week of work or whatever, you realize, oh no, these people don't understand now, next, later. They want everything on a deadline.
Yeah, without testing, you know, without testing the appetite for that. That's a preview.
It's a different podcast.
Yeah, but no, because you've read all the Marty Kagan books, first thing you tell your product leader is, let's fire all our agile coaches. No, don't do that. No, seriously though, question everything. That's what it comes down to. You're handed things or you're driven toward existing roadmaps, etc. Maybe you inherited it, but question it. Question it and look for quick wins because you just got onboarded. You're going to have to provide some evidence that you know what you're doing. You know, that whether it's 30, 60, 90 or not, you have to prove that you are adding value. So question it, ask questions, and make small pivots and try and get some wins.
You know, the interesting part about managing a product portfolio and or managing a roadmap is managing the product's finances. I think this should be something that's in your interview questions is, do I manage the P&L, you know, the profit and loss for this product, like top to bottom, up to me to manage? And if the answer is no, you have a red flag that you have to talk about in the interview. And you really have to think about this for a second before you accept the job. And a lot of people, product managers, have not had P&L responsibilities. So they probably would be okay taking the job because they would say, well, at least it's not as bad. It's on an equal footing with all the previous responsibilities that I've ever had. And they would look at it that way. Like, it's like, oh, well, it's not that bad. Where I'm questioning it is if you're not in control of the finances. Again, this is just my experience. I have found if you're not in control of the finances, that the slippery slope, downhill slide to you're not in control of prioritization is super quick. It is extremely fast. And that stuff can spiral out of control very quickly.
Yeah, look, I agree with that completely, right? If you're not aware or in control or in charge of the finances for your product, you're not really a product manager, are you? That was contentious, wasn't it? No, really, you're not, right? Because what are you managing? The product aside, are you simply, you know, in charge of formulating requirements? You're a glorified BA, right? You have to be responsible for the viability, the P&L, the P&L piece of it. If you're not, and if you're just simply saying, you know, that's handed down to you, then that's the product manager, not you, whatever title they hold. So yeah, I agree. It should be part of the interview process. If you're interviewing to be a product manager, you really need to own the P&L process.
Sure.
You need to own whether the product is profitable or not. How can you do that without owning the accountability for it? I don't understand.
I'll just tell you.
Yeah. Dear product leader, I'm just a product owner then. Don't pay me as much as a product manager. Come on now.
Yikes. Well, in the same vein as owning the P&L, let's pivot to something else that's equally important is owning the customer experience. So customer experience, user experience, user insights, whatever you want to call it, like the when you come on board, in the early part of coming on board as a product manager, learning your customers talking to them, figuring out who they are, how they use the product, like what the problems are, you know, especially if you don't come from the domain, right, business domain. I think of putting yourself in the middle of whatever customer feedback processes that you have in place now. I don't know if they're surveys, forms, you know, input, like in-app feedback, if that's a thing. You know, I think in the Inspired book, Marty Kagan talks about visiting like 30 customers in the field where they are. I mean, that was sort of like a, I don't know if it's exactly the same. He was obviously talking about a B2B type of solution, right? But sessions to basically watch and sit with customers as they use your product in whatever capacity that is.
There's no substitute for that, honestly. Yeah. There's the only way to learn is to, you know, walk a day in their shoes. You can start, if you're just on a new organization, you can start by working with your ops and support people. Mm. How difficult is our product to operationalize? And then once it's out in the wild, what are the issues that customers are reporting? Mm. You're just learning at a distance still, but you're learning, right? And then that would be hopefully a stepping stone to going out there and spending time with customers.
Right, right.
There is no substitute for that.
Yeah, until you start doing that, you can't really start segmenting your audience to say, well, these users use a product like this, and these users, right, you know, like that's like the stereotypical like developer experiences. We never expected this group of users to use a product like this, whatever this is. But you know, the other thing that you didn't mention, sales can help with this. If you know, so like sales is like the on one end of the spectrum, and customer solutions / customer support is on the other end of the spectrum. You know, one is at the, you know, forefront when you're just touching, when you're just talking to users to start, and the other one is the users are, you know, have been using your product and your experience for a period of time potentially. So that's interesting, and these are all internal employees. So theoretically, you should have free rein to go everywhere.
They're accessible to you, right?
Completely.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah. Sales is interesting because, you know, after you've been in the organization for a bit, you could actually accompany them on pre-sales or at conferences.
And you should.
And ask the questions of customers at that point.
Right.
Before the customers even signed, you know, an LOI or MOU or whatever it is, right up front. And that's a way you can learn about those signals, right? Yeah. What's important to the customers?
Well, in addition to what's important to the customers, you have what's important to you, the person being onboarded, the new product manager in the organization. What's important to you is that this is a position that you continue to develop your career and your in your individual contributor skills, or even if you're you could be a product leader of product leaders. Right, I guess, but not really where this is targeted, but the point is the same. Whatever role you're in, you have to make sure that you have mentorship and or coaching. I can't remember what book it was I read recently. Oh, it might have been the Transform Marty Kagan book where he was talking about product leaders, like coaching is a big part of the product leader's job and really any manager's job. Like coaching is a big part of it. And if you're not doing coaching as a product leader, what really are you doing? I think of the same thing as technical leads, any of the people in the leads position. Like coaching is a huge part of your job. And if you're not doing that, or you're not good at it, or you're too busy to do it or whatever, you know, coaching sessions, I don't know. Like, I don't know what you're really doing with your life and your job at that point.
This is true. Absolutely. But, you know, in some organizations, those leaders are quote unquote too busy. Those coaching avenues just don't exist. In that case, if you're a new product manager coming into an org like that, look for things like product manager's community of practice. If there isn't one, guess what? You hand up and say, I'll start it. You're not the expert. You don't have to be. But you are initiating something as a forum for other people to come in and help one another out.
Right.
So I think that's what I would do if I was at a company where there was no such avenue and I didn't have access to, you know, mentorship, coaching, right, from the product leadership, you know, that strata. I would say, just open up and say, let's get together.
Yeah.
You know, let's just meet over lunch.
Yeah,
let's talk about things.
Yeah, and if you're not asking, like you as the new, you know, being onboarded product manager here, if you're not asking, you know, hey, help me identify my skill gaps or areas where I can improve of what I'm doing day to day. And off the top of my head, I think of organizations that you're just not, you don't want that, you don't want to expose that vulnerability because the culture is the type of culture where you know, oh, that person's vulnerable. That's looked down on.
Yeah, it's a sign of inadequacy and failure. But, you know,
that's just not. I mean, what you were outlining, participation in workshops and conferences and internal training programs and kicking things off and just be the first person to raise your hand and say, like, hey, it doesn't seem like we have a program for this or whatever. The way that that's perceived, it's just not in a positive light. That might be an organizational thing. And like, okay. That might be a problem with the organization. Let's put that aside for a second. But if it's just like we're all too busy, like this is where I've seen it more often, is we're just too busy.
Right.
Like, we want to have a community practice. We have several teams with several different product managers, and all the product managers kind of are a little bit different in the way that they approach the situation, you know, approach their day to day. Maybe we should talk about our wins together in one forum. Maybe we can, you know, deploy like a lightweight lean coffee style, you know, approach. Like, it doesn't really require a lot of prep. I mean, like, maybe a simple tool. You have to go find, you know, spend 5 minutes Googling for a lean coffee tool.
You could use anything, literally. You could use Jamboard up until the end of this month, which is day after. Wow. Yeah, just being discontinued. Anyway, my point is, you could use a collaborative, you know, Word document, Google Docs, whatever. It doesn't matter what you use. But do it, because it's the barrier to entry for that is so low. Mm. It just takes the willingness for someone to say, like you were saying, you know, be vulnerable. Just say, let's set this up so we can help one another. Right. And I think that's very powerful, because it can offer opportunities like, hey, I really don't know what I'm doing here. Yeah. Has anybody come across this?
Yeah.
Or can I shadow somebody for a bit who has done this before? Because there could be people at the org that have done, you know, product management for a bit longer than you're just joining.
Right.
So you can take advantage of their tutorship, their mentorship, right? But you have to start that if it doesn't exist. And if it exists, then be part of it. Don't miss out.
Shadowing is one that I call out a lot of times, because I tell people, even when they're interviewing, I tell people, if you were to pick up the Scrum Guide and read it, you know, all whatever, 12, 14 pages of whatever it is in all its glory.
Yeah.
I was like, then you would be completely ready process-wise to take over my teams as a product manager, because I'm not doing anything that's different. I don't have any extra things plugged in than the Scrum Guide. And the biggest thing that I would want to impart on a new product manager would be backlog refinements. Because the activity of backlog refinement, that's right, I call it an activity. I didn't call it an artifact. The activity of a backlog refinement is completely different on my teams than the sprint planning. And a lot of teams don't understand a lot of developers I've talked to don't understand. They're like, I don't, they both look like planning sessions to me. I don't see a difference.
Well,
and I say, well, give it a month or so.
Right?
You will see a difference.
Yeah. Look, first of all, backlog refinement's not in the Scrum Guide, right? So it's an activity. And we always tell people it is not a meeting. It is an outcome, right? Backlog refinement is an outcome, meaning at the end of the meeting, people should have a better and improved shared understanding of what you're doing and why you're doing what you're doing. Unless you're doing that, backlog refinement tends to be one of those things where people just say, you know, I got to drop after 30 minutes because I have another meeting.
Right.
It's like they're not bought into the concept of learn more about what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do that. So I agree with that. I think there's a lot of people that hide behind, and this is mainly Scrum Masters, but also product people. They say, if it's not in the Scrum Guide, we shouldn't be doing that. We're just following the Scrum Guide. It doesn't say how to do this or why we should do it.
Right.
Backlog refinement is one of those things, and it's not an activity there. So they're like, well, you know, it's written down. They can ask me questions if they're in doubt. That is so wrong, because they're not everybody's going to ask the questions. First of all, people are going to assume things. They'll have their own interpretations of what a written word actually means, as opposed to having a dialogue and having the opportunity to go back and forth, or just even as a passive participant in that refinement meeting, you're listening to questions and points that other people are making, which is improving your understanding, right? All of that is gone by the wayside if you do away with the activity.
Hmm. The interesting part about this is that coaching I would expect from my product leader, that should just be a normal part of having a product leader. If you're going to call yourself a product leader, you know, which this is not the part to dig into the term product leader. Because a lot of product leaders are managers. But I want to crowbar apart the role of coach and the role of mentor out of product leader. Because there may be product leaders out there that are not capable of being your mentor. And like a mentor is someone that, to me, mentor is someone that you seek out. And a coach is like a role your manager may or may not be able to play. They should be able to play, but may or may not be able to play. Do you understand where I'm going with this?
I do, absolutely.
I'm glad that you know. I'm glad you know where I'm coming from, because I'm not exactly sure where I'm going with this.
It's something that I think a lot of product leaders can provide, because it's all about, here's what's worked in my experience or hasn't worked, regardless of what their experience has been. That's mentorship. Coaching is, let me help you with this journey, right? And mentorship could be a subset of that. If the coach has gone through that themselves, but they don't have to have gone through that themselves.
Yeah, this is not the destination that I had in mind when we had this podcast as an idea. But since we're here, let me walk this road a little bit. Going back to what I said early in the podcast, where a lot of product, quote, product leaders, meaning people that hire product managers, at the highest level in the organization, the chief product officer, they're not capable of mentoring product managers. Now, they may be capable of coaching. Hey, when I was with you in this meeting, you know, you need to talk to this stakeholder. You need to be better at communication. You need to be better. They might be able to give you some general coaching advice. But is that also mentorship? Like, I'm not sure.
No, it's not. By definition, look, if these CPO level people cannot mentor you, it's because they've not had the experience themselves that you are either going through or are about to go through. And we said earlier in the podcast, that's quite a lot of CEOs out there that haven't done the work themselves, but they have the position, right? So in that case, they're not qualified to mentor you because they haven't gone through it themselves. Mm. Now, to your point about them being able to coach you, right, on things that they can do that after the fact and say, you know, in this meeting, you could have handled this way, etc. Okay, I mean, that's fine, but it's really not, it's really not coaching at that point, right? Not even sure what that is. I think it's post-event facilitation kind of feedback is what that is. If they were coaching, they would say, when you did that, what did you expect to happen? What actually happened? How could you have done it? So it's all asking more questions than giving directives, and then letting you figure out what you could have done differently yourself, and then leaving with a commitment. What are you going to try different next time? That's coaching. I don't see many CPOs doing that either, unfortunately.
I could see them doing that, but it wouldn't be on product practices. It would be on operations practices or you know, sales, right, or interpersonal relationship building or something like that. It would be things that are adjacent to product.
Right.
But they would never coach you on something to say like, hey, when you said that I need X feature over Y feature, or that we need, you know, all customers need to be able to perform X functionality, don't you think you could have posed that as a question or an A-B test of some type to say, okay, everyone on the development team says we've got to do functionality X before functionality Y, but how do we know that functionality X or Y are the things that we need to do? Maybe we need to just test functionality X, and depending on what comes out of the test, then we try Y or Z or AA or AC or whatever, like a million other options. Like they're not coaching you on product discovery practices. They're coaching you more on general, I'm not going to say life coach because that's not what it is, but they're coaching you more on general interpersonal skills or sales skills, or I mean related skills. They're related to product management, but they're not exactly product management. So I don't know. I don't even know what point I'm trying to make anymore. Is
that kind of coaching is not, I'm not saying that kind of coaching doesn't have value, mm-hmm, right? It still does, but
it's just not product management coaching.
Correct. Exactly. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. All right. Well, you've turned me around and I'm on your side now. So successful arguing agile tonight. I'm super interested if anyone listening to this has a hot take on, you know, any of what we're talking about, especially what we wrapped up with is mentoring and coaching. And when your quote leadership, end quote, because I mean, really, it's management we're talking about.
It is management.
When they basically don't have the skill to coach you, like, I mean, that they don't have the skill to coach you in your primary role. I'm not trying to make a statement that says that coaching is not valuable.
Right.
It certainly could be, but like, if you're new and you're onboarding and they're giving you general advice, like, okay, that I guess that's helpful for you as a person in all of your, you know, interpersonal communication and everything. But when we're talking about like, well, how do you choose to make bets in the market,
right,
and test those bets. And how do you know, how do you identify that something's an assumption versus evidence? And how do you choose what evidence to pick over other evidence? Like, they're not coaching you on product management specific things, just identifying when things are not exactly equal, and kind of understanding like, maybe this person doesn't have the exact right skill that I need to advance myself in my career. Now you've got to go pound the pavement and go look for a mentor on your own.
Yeah, it would be great to hear from people with you know, that kind of feedback, as well as if you are or have onboarded and your experience has been that all you're getting is advice that your grandma might give you and not necessarily product management related advice, you know, let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
And also, we'd love to hear about your grandma.
Yeah.
And also, your grandma told me you should like and subscribe to this podcast.
That's right. Ring that bell down below, she said. Yeah.